You're listening to Insight from Capital Public Radio. I'm Beth Ruyak. More now about alternative schools. Where, other than public schools, are you sending your children? In a moment, we're going to focus on Montessori schools, but here's some comments about the Waldorf education style, which we talked about yesterday. We had a number of comments from people describing the kind of children that go through Waldorf programs and graduate. From Holly, she said, my son and his friends are some of the most well-spoken young people I've ever met. This education helped him become a young man who thinks for himself, is well-prepared for college, and consistently exploring new areas of life. And Dinya also said, with two children in Waldorf, that a Waldorf grad in public school said, my peers are searching for who they are, but my friends and I from Waldorf, we already know. We also heard some comment about the tuition question, which came up, saying that some schools in the Waldorf network do charge more or less. Suzanne explained to us that a lot of that has to do with location and demographics, but that education for all is still the ideal. So we appreciate hearing from you, and we're going to continue this conversation today, as I said, moving on to the Montessori style of education. These in particular are schools that focus on early childhood learning. And again, I invite you to email or Facebook or tweet me at Cap Radio Ruyak about your experience. Joining me now in studio is Dr. Steve Hughes. He is the president of the American Academy for Pediatric Neuropsychology and the chair of the Association Montessori International Global Research Committee. Dr. Hughes, welcome.
Well, thank you, Beth. I'm delighted to be here.
Good to have you here. And Matt Hillis is the executive director of, am I going to say this right, Bergamo?
I'll take it.
All right, Montessori schools. That's two schools in the Pocket area of Sacramento and one in Woodland. So welcome to you as well.
Nice to see you.
Dr. Hughes, I'd like you to start using a few words that will help distinguish Montessori from a public school.
Hands-on, individualized, collaborative, creative, developmental. In fact, Montessori was an early... She was one of the first physicians, female physicians in Italy, but she was also an anthropologist. And so as she developed this model of education, she really based it on observation for what children's developmental needs are and created environments where children can get the hands-on experience that helps them develop their language ability, their mathematics skills, their fine and gross motor skills. She was really one of the earliest and greatest developmental psychologists of our time. She wasn't a developmental psychologist, but she really helped define what developmental psychology would be.
Dr. Marie Montessori, and the first school was back in 1907, was looking to provide something for a specific group of children.
That's right, a group of children who were basically street kids living in the streets of Rome. And she realized that traditional education wasn't open for them. In fact, they didn't have a lot of opportunities open for them. And she applied some methodology that had been developed by others and that had been actually begun with children who had like psychological handicaps. And saw there was miraculous results from children being able to engage in hands-on learning with material. And she began applying that material for children from normal developmental backgrounds, but who no one felt there was much hope for. And in a fairly short period of time, saw, again, remarkable development in these children, both in terms of their language and mathematics and all sorts of academic learning skills, but maybe more fundamentally in their ability to self-regulate, to make decisions about the kind of things that they were going to do and really their preparation for a happy, successful life.
She's an intriguing person. There, she went against the grain in so many ways in what she chose to do as a person, as a woman, and in her field. The concept was embraced around the world. And Matt, just in the schools here in Sacramento, which don't go into high school, they stop at eighth grade, describe this constructionist kind of task-oriented style of teaching.
I think it's very similar to the way in which our professional lives are led today. If you go into a Montessori classroom, you can really see children at work. They're doing purposeful work. They are independent in their work. And if you think about the way in which we work today, we're not in a factory where there's a whistle that's blowing and we're responding to somebody else's direction. Our economy today is really rewarding people who can go out and get it and know what they want and know how to do it. And if you go into a Montessori classroom, you can see that in action with children as young as three. It's amazing.
Task-oriented, what would you add to that?
Well, task-oriented. So active, exploring, experimenting. One of the things that you'll find most striking when you enter a Montessori classroom is that there's just tons of materials. There's a well-equipped classroom has as many as 300 kind of discrete activities that children can engage in. They're presented to the child in a developmental sequence by the teacher.
Starting as young, by the way, as 18 months.
Yeah, oh, for sure. In fact, there's a version of Montessori for children from birth, like zero to Montessori tends to be segmented from age 0 to 3, from age 3 to 6, and 6 to 9, and 9 to 12. And there's even Montessori that's been designed for children and adolescents, 12 to 15, and even now 15 to 18. There's increasing number of Montessori high schools around the world.
And children learn in those age groups.
Mm-hmm. And they learn in a multi-age environment. So in a typical age, a typical 3 to 6 environment, there'll be children 3, 4, 5, and 6. The older children might be making presentations on new material to the younger children. There certainly is a beautiful social climate there as well.
It's a community. It's a real community.
Yeah, it's a learning community.
That extends to the family, extends outside of the school, Matt?
I think it's the way in which they practice being in community and learn how to be. One of the greatest ways I've heard Montessori describe is that children learn a lot about themselves, but they learn how to interact in the context of a group, which is not happening in conventional education now, unfortunately. You can really see in a Montessori classroom children starting to temper their relationship with a small group of peers, but also, you know, 30 other children. And the earlier you learn that, in my opinion, the better off you're going to be when you're moving into professional workforces.
So yesterday, as we learned about Waldorf, we heard about a spiritual aspect of life and the development of the consciousness. And we actually had a message from Tina saying that the spiritual piece isn't necessarily true for everybody that buys into Waldorf, but it's about learning the foundations. So how would you distinguish Montessori from what Waldorf looks like and what their mission is? Dr. Hughes?
I think there's very much a feeling that we're here for the well-being of the children. I mean, I think that from the kind of culture of the learning environment, I think that there are some real similarities. Matt has a great way of describing Montessori relative to Waldorf.
We were talking about this in the green room earlier, and you know, Montessori and Waldorf are both, I view them as left of center from conventional education, and it's progressive. If Montessori is left of center, Waldorf is left of us, and for some parents, it's a really good fit. It's very holistic, it's arts-based, and that fits their needs. What I love about Montessori is that it's so practical. There's practical applications and implications for the education.
I'm speaking with, you just heard Matt Hillis, and Dr. Steve Hughes is also with us. We're talking about the alternative education style of Montessori schools. And if you or your child had a personal experience and you want to share it, please email or Facebook us, or you can tweet me at Cap Radio Ruyak. I am interested in your work, Dr. Hughes. You're here this week in Sacramento talking about education reform in general. But you come from a medical perspective. So what direction does brain research say that we should be going?
Well, without question, developmental neuroscience points in the direction that Montessori has been leading for over 100 years. Contrast what we need from children with what children are getting now in school. Increasingly, the curriculum has been narrowed to that which is going to produce adequately progress on standardized test scores. In pursuit of that goal, we've eliminated things like Phi-Ed, we've eliminated art, we've eliminated music from the curriculum. The curriculum, the range of legitimate activity that you can undertake in a public school has been narrowing. Research shows this very clearly to those things that speak directly to basic skills. Well, this isn't what children need to succeed in life. If your listeners want to learn more about the kind of things that do matter in life, they would do well to look for the work of Nobel Prize laureate James Heckman, who has been speaking for many years about the importance of what he calls soft skills or non-cognitive skills. I don't like to call them non-cognitive skills because being able to interact well with others, having emotional resilience, being able to survey a situation and figure out what needs to be done in this context, you know, these are also cognitive skills. Traditional education has moved steadily away from that, yet it is, in fact, those things that are being eliminated that are most supportive of children developing a sense of what kind of thing lights them up, what their interests are, the kind of things that they're kind of here on earth to do. Those are the things that make a real difference in life outcomes. I mean, we can look at some of the most famous Montessori graduates. Jimmy Wales, Jeff Bezos. I mean, life online and this new thing that is the internet was defined substantially especially by Montessori graduates. And I think that's not by accident, because they had the capacity to think out of the box, to see something new and, you know, figure out how to make something important happen with that.
How early are Montessori students exposed to computers, Matt?
Technology
in general?
That's a great question. It depends on the school. I don't think that there's a real rote way of looking at that. For us, we actually introduce computers sparingly as they get older. It's used as a tool, though. And unfortunately, I think lots of people will look at the computer as an actual curriculum, per se. We're using it as a tool for research. We're using it as a tool for composition. But that's it. It's not supposed to be it's a separate type of curriculum.
Yeah, and I would really support that as well. You know, the trouble is that technology is inherently compelling. If there's a computer in the classroom, that's something that children want to engage with. If there's an iPhone in the classroom, that's something that children want to engage with.
That's so true.
But this is the water they're swimming in. They're going to know technology. They already know technology. And when we introduce computers as an end in themselves, because we think as adults that technology is great to have around, it's a distraction from other kinds of developmental tasks. People who have been in the education game for a long time have been for years talking about the decreased fine motor skills that children who are, say, age 3 have when they enter preschool. They don't know how to operate their hands the way that they used to. Human beings haven't changed substantively in 100 years or 1,000 years. The things that are good for human cognitive, social, and emotional development are still having to do with things like working with your hands, solving problems, exploring the world through the use of your hands, and engaging with other children or adults and exploring and discovering how the world works. And technology can play a role in that as a tool,
sure.
But too often it's introduced at a time that it's a distraction.
A few last checkpoints. We have at least 7 elementaries closing here in the Sacramento City Unified District, and parents would love to have an option to go to a school like this, but sometimes it's tuition prohibitive.
Mm-hmm.
We talked a little bit about Waldorf in relation to Catholic school tuition.
Mm-hmm.
Where does Montessori come in that spectrum?
It will be on the upper end, that's for sure. It's not an inexpensive method to use with children. There are expensive materials. There's expensive training that goes along with it. That said, I think that there are many financial aid programs that exist at our school and others. But there's also many public options that exist for Montessori as well in the area.
Yeah, we've heard ranges from $300 to $1,300 to $1,500 a month, and it really seems to vary from school to school
and
location.
It depends on where you are as well.
AMI versus AMS accredited. Is an accreditation important for a Montessori school?
Absolutely.
What do you want to look for?
No, you want to look for teachers who have strong, extensive training. You want to stay away from schools where teachers have got weekend seminar type training or a one night a week type training.
Okay.
This is a real barrier in the public sector where training tends to be inadequate.
And the important thing to point out really is that the Montessori name is not trademarked, so anybody can use it for any
purpose.
Anybody
can open a Montessori.
We could have Beth Ruyak Montessori School tomorrow. And you can put that shingle up on the wall here.
So the name might be a clue or it might not be a clue.
Caveat emptor, do your research.
Okay. Mm. A final thought here about the description of the kids. You heard me describing what parents say about their Waldorf graduates. So let's just close with the graduates in the type of people that you see coming from a Montessori education. Dr. Hughes?
Oh, centered, smart, sensible. They know themselves. They're kind. They know that everyone everywhere has the same sort of needs and desires and wants, and they're mature. They're remarkable children, and we hear that time and again from people who receive Montessori graduates into their traditional programs. Please send us more just like this one.
I completely echo that, and I would add grounded and also curious. There's a certain, you can see it in the eyes of a Montessori child where they're amazed by the wonders of the world, and to have that trait continue into adulthood, I think, is a really, really major benefit of Montessori education.
They love learning.
Absolutely.
They love learning. Mm-hmm.
Matt Hillis, Dr. Steve Hughes, thank you so much for the conversation.
Thanks for having us.
Thank you.
We've posted more details at capradio.org/insight, and please share your story with us. You're listening to Insight from Capital Public Radio.